We start today's program with a ruling by Maricopa County Superior Court Judge Catherine Cooper. It would require Governor Brewer and the legislature to come up with an extra $316 million immediately and potentially $2.9 billion over 5 years to make up for aid to schools they illegally withheld starting in 2009. A 2000 voter-approved measure hiked the sales tax by 0.6 cents and required the state to boost aid to schools each year to account for inflation. That occurred until the governor and lawmakers concluded they didn't have the money to spend. The Supreme Court ruled last year the law had been broken, sending the case to Judge Catherine Cooper to figure out how much schools are owed. She ordered state aid reset to what it would have been had the law been obeyed all along. Later this hour, we'll find out whether a special legislative session might have to happen to figure out what's next. But for now, I'm joined by Chris Thomas, General Counsel for the Arizona School Boards Association. Chris, good morning.
Good morning.
And Matthew Ladner, Senior Advisor of Policy and Research for the Foundation of Excellence in Education. Matt, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Chris, for this moment in time, what does Judge Cooper's decision mean in the practical sense for K-12 schools?
Well, what it means is that really two big things. One is that there will be a reset of the inflation factor moving forward, so that increases from this point forward will be as if those increases were made all along. That's really a critical component for us, and it's going to result in a lot of additional spending on K-12 education in keeping with what the voters intended in 2000.
So how much has the funding shortfall over the past 5 years or so practically affected Arizona K-12 schools?
Well, greatly. I mean, sometimes it's in the decisions that were not made. For instance, raises not given to teachers, or programs that were dropped, class sizes that were increased, or maintenance that was not done on buildings. These are the kind of decisions that over time really erode the system as a whole. Certainly, when it comes to teacher salaries, if we're going to attract and retain the best teachers we can get, we need to be able to offer a competitive salary. And with 85 to 90% of our money that comes through the operations budgets going to salaries, that's really where it hits the hardest.
Matt Ladner, I want to have you comment on that. But before that, what does Judge Cooper's ruling say about how the legislature has prioritized K-12 funding? How complicated has this been?
Well, I mean, I think the key thing to understand is that, you know, if we ask just the general public and we say, do you support additional K-12 funding? People say yes, right? We want our public schools to succeed, and all else being equal, we'd like to spend more. The job of the legislature, however, is to make the numbers work, right? And we do have a number of other priorities for public funding in this state. We have the Medicaid program. We have, you know, courts and jails and roads and everything else. So I think this is a bit indicative of the danger of, you know, sort of budgeting by ballot process, because, you know, you wind up, you know, being unable to anticipate something like what was a very severe downturn in revenues. So, you know, we've sort of muddled through this. Governor Brewer supported a temporary tax increase. When that cycled off, you know, a number of groups that are supportive of public education raised signatures, had their own tax increase, a permanent one. Opponents of that successfully made the case to the public that they were sort of skeptical that this was going to see the inside of a classroom, and the voters voted it down. So where that leaves us, I think, now is that if there is going to be this shift into greater K-12 funding, people need to understand it's going to cost us something somewhere else, right? There's no magic font of money coming out of the ground here, like maybe in Texas with oil and gas revenue. So, you know, if we're going to spend more money on K-12, it's going to be less spending somewhere else.
But Matt, does Arizona deserve its reputation as maybe not prioritizing funding for education as much as other states?
I think the reality is that when you compare Arizona to other states, we're fairly modest on the spending side. That's true, okay? However, it is also the case that we spend way more now than we did in previous decades, okay? Arizona is ultimately a fairly poor state, and the wealth that we have in the state is concentrated amongst retirees, many of whom don't pay income tax because they don't spend enough time here per year, right? So I think that there's some big questions we need to address. This is more like a middle-sized skirmish in the grand scheme of things. I think there are much bigger problems coming down the pike.
Chris, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think you know, Matt is being charitable when he says that Arizona is fairly modest in terms of spending on K-12. When you look at the rankings, we end up being 47th or 48th. I know a lot of people say, well, those rankings really don't matter, but they do matter because they have real-world consequences. And you could always say that, well, Arizona is you know, we have a lot of retirees, we have a lot of low-income wage earners that don't pay a lot of taxes. But, you know, we compound the problem over and over again by we cut taxes here and there. It adds up over time. And then when a bill like this comes due, the legislature turns its pockets over or out and says, we don't have any money. Well, that's only because the menu has been set already. So what we're saying is, you know, it's not our job, obviously. The legislature does have some tough choices to make. We recognize that. And nobody likes to pay taxes. But in the end, we need to pay for the programs that the people seem to want. And what they seem to want pretty clearly is a strong K-12 public education system. And this, they showed that in 2000 when they voted for this, to provide schools a measure of inflation so that they keep pace. And by the way, the legislature put that before the people. So it's not as though it's always been the people against the legislature. The legislature put this before the people in Proposition 301, which was a referendum. The people voted for it, and it's the law. So it's not a question between the legislature and the courts or the legislature. And it's really about the people getting what they voted for. And so we do believe that this is really critical.
Yeah, I don't disagree with a lot of what Chris just said. I would only note that, you know, the last time the public spoke on this, they, at least a large majority of them, sort of seemed to express skepticism that increased funding was going to be resulting in increased classroom spending. I do think there's a path forward here where if we had spending proposals that were clearly going to be tied to, say, improved academic performance. There are a variety of different programs like this around the country. Governor Brewer's championed one here in Arizona. I think that the public support for that would probably be pretty strong. There's a large segment of the population that includes me that thinks that, you know, that view the academic studies on this and just practical experience that there's been large increases in public funding without seeing corresponding increases in student learning.
It's Here and Now on KJZZ. I'm Steve Goldstein in Phoenix with Matthew Ladner and Chris Thomas. We're talking about K-12 education funding in Arizona. Chris, this is hard to quantify, I suppose, but if we look at funding shortfall over the past 5 years, I presume this is not a five-year makeup where Arizona can sort of bounce back within 5 years. Are you concerned that 5 years of shortfall will lead to a decade and a half, where it takes us to really catch up from a practical standpoint?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think there definitely is a compounding problem. And we're actually seeing the compounding problem when we talk about Arizona being 47th or 48th. We're actually talking about the results of a lack of funding that happened during the 90s. Really, before that, Arizona was kind of middle of the pack in terms of funding. So when we go through a period where we don't fund schools and then we get back on board to funding some measure of, you know, cost of doing business increase, we still lose that gap for which we did not provide funding during that period, and that just perpetuates itself over time. And so that's why the voters did vote on the inflationary increase, so we couldn't have those gaps in funding anymore that drop us to the bottom. And they do have real-world consequences. You know, we say that in order to attract and retain the best in any profession, you have to provide a competitive wage. You have to provide that incentive for people to actually go into that profession and stay in that profession. And teaching and good quality teachers are what we need. And this is what this money is all about. It's about providing good quality teachers to deliver high quality programs to Arizona K-12 students.
Matt, are there enough education champions, whether at the Capitol or elsewhere around the state? Because with many things, we hear about it in the world of politics, well, people need to compromise on things. And there are people with very different philosophies about what they think works in K-12, and they may be coming at it equally heartfelt ways. So how do we make that work?
Yeah, it's tough. You know, I think that the big picture here is that there is going to be some funding increases. There have been funding increases in the past, and there will be again in the future. The real problem we have is that, you know, when you take a step back and look at the longer term, by 2030, Arizona will have doubled the number of 65 and older people in this state and will simultaneously be experiencing enrollment growth in the K-12 system. Our middle-aged taxpayers of the year 2030 are in the public school system right now, and we can look at their test scores right now and see that they're not picking up the type of math and reading skills and knowledge that they need to succeed in life, right? So our biggest opportunity for improving public education in Arizona by a very wide margin is not new money, because there's a limit on how much new money there is. We need to be focusing on ways to get a bigger bang for the buck for the dollars that we already put into the system.
Chris, philosophically, can that work?
Sure, it can work. I think the thing is that we have to quantify what the problem is. And when you look at the data that shows how Arizona is doing and actually in terms of the larger sense of how the country is doing in terms of student performance, where we have the biggest problem is with our at-risk populations. And should we direct those monies to those areas where we really need the most help, I think we will see the greatest bang for the buck academically. Because we have... when we look at our best and brightest students, we compare them to other states and other countries, we do pretty well. But when you look at the lower half, the lower tiers of performance, that's where we're really lagging. And part of that is a function of the fact that we are a very impoverished state, and there's a lot of challenges that kids come to school with. And in order to overcome those challenges, we really have to have the resources to do that.
And English language learning, Matt, I presume, is also an issue here.
It is, and we do have a relatively difficult K-12 population, sort of demographic profile. That's true. It's true that we are modest on spending compared to other states. It's also true that we spend twice as much per pupil as we did back in the 1970s. And it's true we've got a pretty tough nut to crack in terms of our student challenges. All of that is true. So what we need to do is to focus on ways. Look, I mean, Arizona is never going to spend its way to high quality schools. It is not in the cards when you look at just the amount of wealth the state has, what our tax system looks like. It's just not going to happen. It's not clear that even if we tried it would, past experience teaches it would probably fail, right? So that's not the way forward. The way forward for us is to figure out, okay, we can spend $9,000 a pupil or, something like that. That's basically what we can afford if we still want to have a healthcare system and prisons and roads and all the rest of that. Okay. Maybe a little more, maybe less. Chris and I can debate that. Okay. But let's say it's $9,000, $9,500, whatever. Okay. What can we do with that $9,500 per pupil that is going to result in more than 40%, not leave 40% of our students illiterate, which is what the NAEP scores tell us right now?
Gentlemen, about a minute left, and I want to come back to the fact that this is an election season. Chris, let me come back to you. Who drives the issue? Who drives the debate on this? Because we saw last night Republican debate over the superintendent of public instruction. There's going to be a general election battle on that in November. How important is that position to driving this debate? Is it still significant? Does it need to be more significant?
Well, it's incredibly significant. I mean, that person has the bully pulpit to advocate for public education. And so, to have somebody there championing public schools could make a big difference in terms of influencing the legislature, influencing the governor, and ultimately the voters.
Matt?
It is an important position. It by itself is not going to get it done, though. I actually am starting to come to the view that it would be a good idea for the state of Arizona at some point to make that an appointed position.
Interesting.
So that we can.
I don't disagree with that either.
Yeah, we need to have that. Whoever the next governor is, say elected in 2018 or whenever it's going to be, ought to have, no matter who it is, Democrat or Republican, they ought to have a free hand for setting a coherent set of policies to try to improve the public education system of the state of Arizona, in my opinion.
Matthew Ladner is Senior Advisor of Policy and Research for the Foundation of Excellence in Education. Chris Thomas is General Counsel for the Arizona Association of School Boards. Gentlemen, thank you both.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Thanks. Here and Now on KJZZ. I'm Steve Goldstein in Phoenix. So what will Governor Brewer and the legislature do? I turn to Howie Fisher of Capital Media Services. Hi, Howie.
How's it going? I love the idea of an appointed school superintendent, except that's one less race for me to cover.
Haven't you covered enough races over the years?
These are always interesting philosophical questions. I mean, should a sheriff be elected? Should a county attorney be elected? We don't elect the police chief. We don't elect the city prosecutor. I mean, these are all fascinating questions. I know I'm a little off this subject, but these are larger philosophical questions that go to the whole issue of education and state governance.
Well, Howie, as far as what the governor and Republican lawmakers had to say, because they're basically taking a lot of the blame for this, what are their thoughts about Judge Cooper's ruling, and where do we go from here?
Well, from the perspective of the Republicans, it's those damn activist judges who, once again, infringing on the legitimate decisions made by the legislature. There's a small problem with that, which is that this started off before Judge Cooper ruled, she was directed by the Arizona Supreme Court to decide how much the state was owed when the Supreme Court found out the legislators and the governor hadn't complied with the law. I seem to recall that this governor appointed three of those justices. So it's not like these are some crazy radicals, you know, like they like to portray the Ninth Circuit. Mm. These are her appointees who said the law is clear. The voters said in 2000, you will increase funding by inflation or 2% every year over what it was the prior year. Seems fairly straightforward to me. So
yeah,
in terms of what's
right.
next,
go ahead.
Mm-hmm. I think it kind of comes down to they're looking at the possibilities of an appeal. They're looking at maybe whether they can do some technical things make the bill a little smaller, you know, ways to tinker with the funding formula that still leave the state technically in compliance with the law, but do not cost, you know, quite the $313 million in immediate funds that they're talking about.
So what does this do to the state budget? How everyone was sort of celebratory. The session ended fairly early as lawmakers could go run for office again. So where does this put them now, considering more than $300 million needs to be put in quickly, right?
Well, I think the colloquial term is deep kimchi. We've got about $100 million cash carry forward. This wipes that out. Now there is about $450 million, I think, in the rainy day fund. So that would take care of the immediate issue. But you have to remember that if in fact we have to rebase it to what it should have been, had they been complying all along, and keep doing that, an extra $300 million a year for the next 5 years. Plus, the larger issue is, what about the nearly $2 billion that was missed that the district should have gotten? Now, the judge has indicated, maybe I won't make them repay that. But at the very least, we're talking, you know, $300 million this year, $300 million next year, $300 million next year to comply with the law.
Is a special session inevitable then?
Not necessarily. You've got some interesting politics at work. You know, we've got a primary coming up in late August, which means that after August, some of the people who will be voting on this will not be back. And they're going to say, heck, it's not my problem. Special sessions around election are always tricky. You know, you can certainly do one, and we did one years and years ago, I think, on child welfare in December. But it's very tricky in terms of, you know, who cares, who doesn't care, who even shows up. If, in fact, the case goes on appeal, there will not be a decision by the end of the year if we go through full-blown briefings to the Court of Appeals and the Supreme Court, so that gives them some time. But that doesn't mean the money goes away. It's not like, well, if we drag it on another year, we'll avoid the $300 million this year. I think it's very clear from the Supreme Court's original order and from what Judge Cooper said, they're going to owe the money. The question is, how quickly do they deal with it and what decisions do they make?
Howie, whether it's from the superintendent race or some of the legislative races, is this going to be a late campaign issue?
I think it could be more in terms of the governor's race than the superintendent's race, although obviously John Hoopethal said early on after the Supreme Court ruling, let's just settle this, put it behind us, and move on. You know, Diane Douglas is, you know, much more conservative in terms of the spending. I don't know that she's specifically addressed exactly how we deal with this court ruling. I think it could be an issue in the governor's race. Obviously, Fred Duval has come out and said, look, let's just comply with the law. It's our children. The Republican candidates have been strangely quiet pretty much in terms of what do we do here, because each of them, with the primary coming up, each is trying to be a little further to the right than the other. Mm-hmm. And nobody wants to be talking about how do we fund this. I mean, there's two ways. You can cut spending elsewhere, and there's not a lot to be cut. I mean, you know, we've cut the universities. You know, prisons are, you know, if we're going to keep a prison system this large of, you know, 40,000 inmates, we've got certain expenditures. What, cut state parks? They're not getting any money anyway. Or you talk about raising revenues, and there isn't a single Republican who wants that T word attached to his or her campaign.
Howie Fisher of Capital Media Services. Howie, thanks so much for joining us long distance.
Appreciate it. See ya.